Valley 104.9 goes behind the scenes with former King County Councilperson Kathy Lambert every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. as part of Valley 104.9's Community Talk and Info Sundays.
Good evening. It is Behind the Scenes with Kathy Lambert, and I'd like to welcome you. We are in the middle of our legislative session in Olympia, and much is happening there. So today's show is going to talk about what's happening in Olympia and what's happening on campaigns and what's happening in the nation. So there's more than enough to talk about. So put on your seatbelt, because some of what I'm going to say is probably not going to be exactly what you want to hear. One of the many shows that I listen to, and in this case, the one I'm going to be talking about for a second, is the Dan Bongino show. And one of the things he said was that for those people who make it a practice of listening to different radio shows and watching different medias, that we see a broader spectrum of what's going on, what's consistent between different media sources and what's not consistent, and then being able to make some conclusions. So I think it's really important. So one of the things that I'm taking on in this show is to expedite for you what is being said and what is being talked about that you may have missed because we have very busy lives. And it is really important because there's a lot happening. And I'm going to start with one that is especially near and dear to my heart. And I'm going to ask you as an action alert to write your legislators. I know that in the 45th district that we don't have support on this, but it is something that I believe that every parent, grandparent, and responsible adult should agree with. If you don't, I'm sorry to hear that. But the issue has to do with child sexual abuse. And the reason this is important to me, one is because I'm a parent, but two, because I have been and am a school teacher and have dealt with children in my classroom who have been molested. And I used to be a teacher trainer for Talking About Touching, which is a program that helps children have the language to let their parents know if somebody is touching them in inappropriate ways. And I will tell you that there were many years in a row, 1 year skipped, but many years over 10, I had students after the holidays come to me and say, Mrs. Lambert, what you told us about in that class happened to me with ex-relative or ex-family friend, not ex as in past, as in name and said right now. And this is what happened. So I had told my students that as a mandated reporter, which means that I must report to the police when these kinds of things happened. And so they knew when they were coming to talk to me that I was a mandated reporter. But mostly what they said, and which is true, is that they knew I cared about them. And I do know from many of the people I know who have told stories about early child abuse and rape, that those need to be dealt with as quickly as possible because it can leave lots of implications to people's future. So this bill is 1296. It has the companion bill in the Senate, which is Senate Bill 5181. What is a companion bill? A companion bill is when the bills are pretty much exact, and then the House looks at their bill, 1296, the Senate looks at their bill, 5181, and they put it through the process. Sometimes they come out the same, and many times they come out amended. And so then at the end, both the House and Senate get together and talk about, well, which should be the bill that goes through the process and gets signed into law, so they have the opportunity to say, as the new legislator or as one who's that's their topic or whatever the political climate is at the time, whose bill is going to be the one that's actually signed into law. So then if there are dueling amendments that have been added to the bill, then they have to decide, will one side concur, which means I will agree with your amendment, or ask you to recede from your amendment. And so that when we send it back to you, that you will then concur that you have agreed that the bill as it is now rewritten as a substitute bill or an enhanced substitute bill, depending upon how many processes it's gone through. When you are looking at a bill number, and if it's below 5,000, it's from the House. If it's above 5,000, it's from the Senate. If it's set, and so it always starts out with HB or SB, Senate bill or House bill. Then it could be S, SB, substitute Senate bill, or it could be ES, SB, or HB, enhanced bills. So when you see them getting more and more letters before the numbers, this is a bill that has lots of complications and has been many places. So that's kind of what's happening. So you may get one bill killed, but the companion bill is still alive, so you can't give up on your advocacy. So I do not have a crystal ball, but some days I feel like I must have, because I predicted, and if you've listened to this radio show before, you've heard me say it, and so it's documented, as many things I have said that have come to be true over time that people didn't agree with, didn't like, called me names for saying, supposedly, now they have all come to be true. So this is another example of that. So I wrote the underlying bill to 1296 back in 1999. So this has been a long ongoing thing. And basically what the original bill was to say that students from the age of 16, and I made it until they graduated from high school, because in certain cases, children don't graduate from high school if they are on an IEP, individual education plan. And so they can be much older. They can be in their 20s before they graduate. So I wanted it to be for people all the way up until graduation, because many of those people are people who have a variety of other issues that I believe that they needed to be protected to. So that was a big deal. The original bill was written many years earlier by then legislator Gary Locke. And he, as many of you know, had been a prosecutor. And so he wrote the bill that said that teachers can't have sex with students up to the age of 16. And then I had two prosecutors, one from the middle of our state and one from our area here in this district, who called me, both of them, unbeknownst to each other, to tell me that they had horrific stories with one was a teacher, one was a counselor, who were abusing teenage girls. And in fact, when the whole thing unloaded, one of the counselors actually had pictures of pretty girls and their birth dates in his office, so he knew when they were turned 16, and then they were not protected under the law. And the law says that under 16 at the time, that it is never a consensual sexual experience with a child under the age of 16. Never. So the child doesn't have to be put through, I liked it, I wanted it, I cared about it, I was okay with it, because it's not appropriate for a teacher or counselor to do so. So that was the law. And so these two prosecutors were concerned because both of the victims were barely over 16. So I found out that the underlying law had been written by Representative Locke. And so I went to then Governor Locke and said, hey, you wrote the underlying law. I'm thinking about expanding it up through graduation. And he told me that originally, yes, that was his original desire, but he had to moderate it back to the age of 16. And so I said, great, that's important. You've set the great foundation. Good work. Will you support me? And the first time I ran the bill, I could say on the floor, and I did, that Governor Locke was supporting my bill. It did not make it through the first time. And so the next session, I did it again, and I went to him and said, hey, I just want you to know I'm going to run it again. And so I want, to re-verify that you're okay with me saying that I have your support. And he said, no, I'm really not okay with it. The prosecutors came to me afterwards and said they really hate these cases, and so they just don't want to deal with it. And I was a little taken aback. And so we had a conversation, probably not one of my finer conversations, but I was not pleased with that answer. But anyway, we went on. It did pass the House, and it got vetoed. It went through the process, got vetoed. And so I got a message. A person came to me and had been looking for me. My staff said I was over on the House floor because I wanted to be alone. And the House floor is very, very large. And my seat was in the middle on the aisle. And there was one other legislator up towards the front, also in the middle, but one row over. And out came Speaker Chop. We had two speakers that year. And Speaker Chop came out and said, "Hey, how you doing?" And I said, "Not well." And he made a joke saying, "Hey, we like it when Republicans have a bad day." And then he saw that I had tears in my eyes. And he came back and he goes, "Oh, no, you really had a bad, bad day." And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Who was that that just left?" And I told him. And he said, "Why was he over here? He's from the governor's office." And I said, "Yes, I know. He's not happy that the governor's vetoing my bill." And he said, "And he came over to tell you personally?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Does he like the bill?" And I said, "Oh, yes, he thinks it's an important bill." And so Speaker Chop and I talked, and he was wonderful. And he and also Speaker Ballard were both speakers, as I said. We did a veto override, and the bill became law. Basically then, and I will tell you, I took a lot of flack. I had the teachers union come and tell me that I was putting teachers at risk of false accusations, that teachers would be under stress. And my thought was, my response, and only my thought, was if any teacher goes to work being stressed, that they could be charged with sexual abuse and were doing such, that they probably didn't need to be teachers. And so at the time, and still, I'm a credentialed teacher. So I reminded them that had never crossed my mind. And so I didn't think that that was a stress that was too much to put on teachers. I reminded them that the teaching code also mentions this, but it was the code and it was not law. And this was going to make it into law. So I was putting up with a lot of flack, even from my own union. So it has been law. And now, this last year, there was an initiative that was to give parents their rights to know what's happening with their child when it comes to mental health, physical health, and various other aspects of their life. I told you when the initiative was being circulated, and I told you then that I was one of the people circulating the initiative and explaining to people why it was important that parents not be left out of decisions about their children. Then the legislature decided that because there were so many signatures, that they would accept some of the seven, which ended up being eight, initiatives. And so they voted in the same session to go back and pass those initiatives, four of them. And at the time, I said, beware, this could be a political game because it takes longer after an initiative passes to undo it. But if they pass it in the legislative session, they can come back the next year and do it. And the fact that unanimously one party said no to this, and then a little bit later, after they saw that the initiative in pretty much record time had gotten your and your neighbors enough signatures to qualify to be on the ballot, they went back unanimously by that one party and voted to say yes. So when you see a swing, one party over the other on any bill, that tells you it's not good public policy. If it's good public policy, you shouldn't have a party line breakdown on the floor. All of those things should have been worked out in committee. And I don't think, and I haven't gone back to check, but I don't think any bill that I wrote was party line. I made sure that I had sponsors from the other party, because when you have a swing to the right or a swing to the left unanimously, what ends up happening is that that is prey to another swing. And good public policy should stand. It shouldn't be that when this party's in power, it goes all this way, and then it swings over this way. It should be that we can rely on good sound public policy that both parties can agree to. So I warned that that was a possibility. And in my heart, I knew it was more than a little warning. And that's why I said it several times. So here we are, the very next, just as predicted, the legislature comes back again and guts much of what is in the initiative language that gave back the parental rights. So if you are a parent or a grandparent or an auntie or an uncle or a neighbor, if you care about children, don't you want those parents to know if that child is under stress or having a mental issues going on. I have debated in my head whether or not I should even tell you this story, but I'm going to. So I had a student that was a very sweet, very quiet student, and I would say on the Richter scale of attractive, pretty much not in the middle. And so this student was very, very quiet. And one morning, about 2:30 in the morning, I woke up to hearing her in my head, in my dream, screaming. And I got up and I was like, oh my gosh, she's not okay. So you know me, you know, that meant prayer time. So I prayed about it and I said, okay, I've got to get her alone and talk to her tomorrow. How am I going to do that? So I got up early, got dressed, went to school, and lo and behold, early, she's the only child on the playground. And I'm like, oh, thank you, God. So I called her and said, hey, you want to help me carry stuff in? And so we started talking. And as we had some conversation, I asked her, I said, how'd you sleep last night? And she said, why? And I said, you know what? I didn't sleep very well last night. 2:30 in the morning, I had a dream and it was you screaming. And she started to cry. And she said, yes, that's true. I said, you want to tell me about it? And so I said, remember, I'm a mandated reporter. And because I care about you, in addition to being a mandated reporter, I need to get you help. And I reminded her that anything that happens to a youth is not their fault, that something like this happens, you are not to be blamed. And so she told me the entire story. So ultimately, her mom believed the story and things worked out as well as they possibly could. So I saw what it did to that child. And luckily, she had a mom that believed what had happened and her daughter and handled it. But I actually had other students that mom didn't believe for a while, and there were other issues. I saw what my students went through, and the idea that their parents didn't know, and how thankful the parents were to find out that that was happening to them, and you know what implications that meant for the family is huge. Even adults that get raped have trauma to deal with, and I am quite well aware of that because I have worked in a drug rehab, and I am very aware of many, many, many stories as well as the ones I heard when I was in the legislature. So, if you are a denier that rape doesn't have impacts on you, that's up to you. But I personally believe that rape is a serious issue, and getting people help immediately is very important. And so the idea that you would not allow the parents to know. So one of the amendments that was put on the 1296 says that if a teacher has sexual misconduct with a student, that student's parents are not to be notified for 48 hours. I can't even imagine as a teacher holding that information from a parent. Now, obviously, I've had to report that to the police. I have been interviewed by the police. And actually, I ended up writing another law because there were times when I knew things about a student and what was going on. And when the police would be involved later, they couldn't tell me what they knew, but they could find out, require me to tell them what I knew. So, getting people to work together for the benefit of the children, in my opinion, is very, very important. So, this child now, because of the proposal, would not have the parents knowing, even though the teacher, the school, the principal knows. And in fact, two principals in the Vancouver area were aware that children were being abused by a staff member, and they did not tell the parents. As a parent, now I'm changing hats. As a parent, if I knew the principal of the school knew one of my children had been sexually abused by a teacher and didn't tell me, oh dear, that would not be a pretty day. So you need to know that just happened. And that bill passed out of the House. Now, I did call Sharon D'Amico Santos, who I served with in the House. I know her. She's been chair of education for a very long time, and tell her, Sharon, this is a serious issue, and I am sad that this came out of your committee. Now, it will go to the Senate, and the Senate, as I just said, has a companion bill. You need to call the House Chair and the Senate Chair Wellman and your legislators and say, what the heck did you do? Because most all of our legislators in the fifth and the 45th are Democrats. And this was the party line that is okay with this. I don't care what party you are. I don't care if you're from Mars or Pluto. I don't care. I care about what's protecting children. And one of the speakers said, a school counselor that was at the hearing said, well, as counselors, we are trained on how to work with the police and that we will follow what goes on with them. Well, a child is a minor, and it is important that what goes on with children include the parents. Now, some people will go to the other extreme and go, well, there's some bad parents. Of course, there is a fraction of parents who are not good parents, but there's a process for that. So why should the 99, 98, 97% of good parents be put out of knowing this important information because there is a fraction, and if the police or the school begin to believe that the parents are involved or that the child is in danger, there is a court procedure to deal with that. So it's not like it will be not a consideration of whether or not these are good parents. So I think it's really important that you notify your legislator. And if you know that your legislator, and it's easy to know without even having to look it up, because this is an example of one party leaving out another party. And so if you have a Democrat person that is it, your elected person, you need to tell them you as a Democrat, you as a Republican, you as an independent, you don't agree with keeping parents out of this for 48 hours. Now, Representative Travis Cottier did say that he proposed an amendment that said you would immediately notify the parents when there has been sexual abuse at school. Hello. That should be a no-brainer. Just like I felt in 1999 that this should be a no-brainer. We should be sending our children to school knowing that they are safe. And as a teacher, I will tell you there were a number of things when I was a state legislator that I saw happen that I called OSPI, I called my staff and the legislature to say, hey, we need a change in either the policy when I called OSPI or in the legislature saying we need a new bill because this does not make children safe. And I had a number of children over the years who had a variety of issues going on in their life. And so I got to see up close and personal exactly how the system worked for these kids. And that's why I wrote laws to make children safer. So this is happening right now. Get up and make a phone call 1-800-562-6000. Again, 800-562-6000. You will get the legislative hotline and you need to tell them that you want a no on 1296 and 5181 and sent to your legislators. So that I believe is really, really important. Our legislators need to know that they are not the parents of our children. We are the parents of our children, and they should not be making these kinds of decisions that are so important and actually do have impact in the family. Now, do not think this only happens to girls and the issues that I was just talking about. This was, in fact, pardon me, a boy in one case and a girl in the other. When I wrote the law, the very first teacher that was convicted under custodial sexual misconduct was a female teacher. And I read in the paper recently, she just died. But back in 99, it was a very well-known case. And I had a reporter call me and say, aren't you mad that it was a woman teacher? And I'm like, I don't care whether it was a woman teacher or a man teacher. It's just the fact that it happened. And I'm so thankful that the law was passed. And again, that law was passed unanimously by Republicans and Democrats back in 1999. So that is the one that I am so charged up about. And I hope you will be charged up about it too, because this is ridiculous. And your legislators are passing this kind of thing. And it is not only this, is they're passing bad bills, but I told you this was probably going to be a game. And they knew they were going to do this. So they deceived you. I do not like to be deceived. My husband and students that I've had over the years will tell you, tell me anything, but make sure it's true. Because if you lie to me, not good. So I believe that last year when they passed this, they knew full well they were going to do it this year. That is a lie. And when you have legislators that represent you, that they do this intentionally. This is not a mistake. This is not an accident. This isn't like a surprise. No, this was a planned thing. And I believe that the party that requires it to be only us making a decision and we're leaving you out, that is wrong. The best year I served in the legislature was in 1999 when we had the same number of Republicans and same number of Democrats, and we worked together. And when we work together, the policies were sound. And that, I think, is really, really important. If you have not heard, Speaker Jenkins and the members in leadership have passed a process that has been, I believe, 132 years, the process in our legislature, that was that you couldn't limit over a certain amount of time a speaker on the floor of the House. So that means that when somebody speaks, you get to hear the whole thing. And you go, usually the speaker will go back and forth, a Republican speak, a Democrat speak, and so that everybody gets an opportunity to share what their thoughts are. When you're in the minority, you know that you're going to not win the day. But I always felt on Lincoln County Council, as a member of the minority and one of the few that read all the bills, that I needed to tell people what was in the bill, because lots of times not all the information or the implications or the fiscal note or some piece of information was discussed. And I felt like it was really important to put on the record, did you know? So that later on, if somebody comes back and says, well, you didn't really tell us that, or we didn't really know, I could say, actually, I did put on the record and I got these ugly emails for saying that, or I got threatened by this group because they had written me an email and told me that I wasn't to discuss that because they had already decided how the bill should be voted on and what it should look like, and how dare I give the rest of the facts. Well, you know, how dare I? Yeah, I did dare because I believe in the truth. So the fact that just this last couple of weeks, the majority party has decided they are waiving that. So if they believe that a member is being redundant, if they believe a member is speaking too long over the time limit, they can decide what the time limit is. And I think you've been talking too much. And that is not okay. If it's a time limit, whether it's 3 minutes, 5 minutes, or no time limit or whatever, that is decided. But for everybody, not just, oh, the majority party gets this, the minority party doesn't get to talk. And we are just a few votes away from them having a super majority where they can overturn, you know, much of what goes on. And I think the idea that this protocol of 132 years to say that the majority party can tell the Republican in this case, or minority, I don't care either way, that they have to stop speaking is just unbelievable. When you make the rules of engagement so unfair that it's just heartbreaking, it's lying to the people because now you only know what people want you to know. I could tell you hundreds of times where I took information to radio, TV, newspaper, and was told, gee, my publisher, my editor doesn't really want that out, or the editor of the Times already heard from Dow, and so they don't want that story out, so we aren't going to be able to write about it. So, you know, it was disheartening to me because even if people didn't agree with me, at least they needed to know that that was what was happening. And then they can choose to agree or disagree. But if you don't even know it's happening, you're in la la land. And, you know, I got accused of many things over the years, but the truth of the matter was, it was the truth. And disguising or hiding the truth comes out to bite. And here again in 1296, we see it biting all over again. So we have a choice. Do we roll over and play dead and say, oh, yes, we don't really care about children. We don't really blah, blah, blah. No, we need to step up, whoever you are, call that hotline number and say, what the heck is going on here? This is not acceptable. And 48 hours is ridiculous for a child to be dealing on their own with trauma. It's just not okay. So who are we protecting? And in the conversations in the hearing, oh my gosh, that they were talking about being student-centered. Well, now that sounds really good, but that's a bunch of baloney. It's not student-centered to say that the child can't be at the center with parents around. The center is the family. And this is part, in my mind, of how they want to break up the family. Oh, your family doesn't need to be here. School or government, they'll take care of you. Don't you worry. Well, we should worry. Family is important. And no child, and in my opinion, no anybody should be dealing with trauma on their own. That's my personal belief. But when it comes to kids, I have seen it up close and personal as a teacher and as a friend, and then working in a drug center to see the outcomes of things not being done. So that's what's happened. You've been deceived, and that's a problem. And so I think that one of the things that's happening to people right now is that we have been so inundated with deception that we don't know what's up and what's down anymore. And, you know, I put things out on my Facebook page and then I laugh sometimes because I get these vitriolic, ah, you don't know what you're talking about. This is wrong, blah, blah, blah. Now, there are issues where facts come out at different amounts of dribble, but for the most part, a lot of times you can find somebody to say, oh, no, that's not true. And, you know, it's interesting. There's one happening right now where several people were mad that on my Facebook page, I had said that the forest fires in LA could have been potentially reduced if they had better water pressure. Now, that doesn't sound like that should be too controversial, but, you know, their reservoirs were not at capacity. And the idea of how long the reservoirs were not at capacity was an issue with some people. Now, I have listened to information from the mayor of LA. I have heard from commissioners from LA. I listened to the briefing with the president, with members of the Congress, members of the Board of Supervisors, the mayor of LA, and the first responders. If you did not see that interview, oh my gosh, it's worth watching. It was awful. So I'll get into that in a minute. But the issue is that nowhere in any of that was there anybody refuting the fact that the reservoirs had been brought down for too long. I don't care whether you said it was 3 days, 6 days, 6 months, a year. The fact that the reservoirs were not frequently monitored for, okay, the rainfall's not really what we thought, and the runoff. So we do need to adjust our decision on how high the reservoir needed to be. Now, President Trump has been very clear that he felt that the water spigots coming from the north should have been turned on. I think that sounds like a reasonable idea. I haven't followed that one. But the other one is that he has been saying for years, since he was president before, that the forest management practices needed to be improved. Boom, mic drop. Yes, we had a forest fire in our state, in the middle of the state, and one of the commissioners was very vocal about saying that he had federal land, state land, and local forests. They were adjacent to each other. They burned at very different rates. And he was very vocal, saying, look, this is not okay. There are three different forest practices here, and much more damage was done with this forest practice. And he got a lot of pushback because, you know, this group wants to do this, and this group has this value, and that group has this value. And he said, no. We are talking about human lives here and property, and we do need to have better forest practices. And President Trump repeatedly at this meeting that I will talk about, which was horrific, said over and over, I told you when I was president before that your forest practices needed to be cleaned up, and you didn't do it. And now, look what's happened. And there were a number of people pushing back on forest practices. No. We know, even if no other place in the country knows, we have a commissioner from the middle of the state who does know and could be asked, okay, tell us what happened when you had that forest fire and learn from that. Now, President Trump said that he has talked to people from other foreign countries who do not have forest fires, even though they have lots and lots of trees because of their forest practices. Okay, well, we have somebody in this state that I know is reliable. President Trump has three different countries that are reliable. Why do we have to have these issues and debate? When do you want forest fires? No. Do you want all these people? The number has gone from 7,000 homes up to 16,000 homes. I have no idea what the number is because it changes. 29 people dead. Not okay. So there are a lot of policies and conversations that, you know, people are saying, well, that never really happened. So back to the meeting. Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, it was horrific in the fact that many of the politicians at the table said the exact same thing. And I've seen it happen over and over. There was a port meeting one time where three of the men on the King County Council wanted to be the leader of the discussion. And I had called the port director a couple of days earlier and said, hey, where are you and what you're thinking? So we could compare kind of where's the port in this project and where are we in this project and start with a solid base that we already know these things need to be done. And then we can tweak it. But let's make a proposal that, you know, we can kind of all agree with to start with and get us at least three quarters of the way there. Well, as it turned out, the overlap was like 99%, but these three members had to say over and over again, the negotiations, what I want. And when it finally came to me, I was like, well, why don't we pull out what you propose since it seems to be the same as what the three gentlemen have just gone over for over and over. So anyway, I've seen it happen. And I was watching this, and it was like a horror story of being through that meeting that I was just telling you about, which was very rude to all the people, the first responders, to all the people in the room, that these pontifications. Then there was one member who was sitting on the left. I tried to look up his name, who then told a bizarre story and kind of chastised the president. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, talking down to the president. Probably not a good idea to talk down to anybody, but the president of the United States, probably not a good idea, unless you're in his cabinet. So anyway, it was horrific. And it was very clear, the first responders, they were applauding, they were screaming USA. They knew that what was being said was what they had experienced on the ground. And there were a number of things that the president said that were what exactly needs to happen. People need to get into their property. They need to see what's going on. There were a number of things that the mayor said. First, she said, we've already done it. Then she said, we'll do it in a week. Then we'll do it in a month. Then we'll do it when this happens. And I'm like, oh my gosh. You either did do it or you haven't done it. And if you are going to do it, first you said a week, now you say a month, and now you say 3 days. It was really interesting to watch. So I was not impressed with what some of the legislators' behavior, and that they were more interested in being the ones to show their constituents they were superheroes rather than saying, thank you, first responders. What can we do? Yes, there were some mistakes. whatever those turn out to be, who knows at this point exactly what they turn out to be. But I think the three that the president brought up, the water pressure, the water being able to be brought from the north, and the forest practices. So I think it's really important that we start looking at what our elected officials are doing and saying and their behaviors. Because when you see a elected official in this group and see that they don't respect the time of other people, they very well could have said, council member such and such, or commissioner such and such, or congressman such and such, or senator such and such. I agree with what he said. When people would come in and testify and say exactly the same thing, they have a right to do so. But the people who would say, this person and this person said exactly what I wanted to say, I agree with them, and here's my added, boy, my ears would go up. I heard what those said, I'm taking notes, and or I'm putting in the information in my head, and now you have an extra piece of information. Ears up, extra strong. What are you telling me that these people haven't already said? And so that information is going in. But to use some of the tactics that these people used in this meeting. So there are two tactics that you need to be aware of. And one is diversion. So you can say that I don't like, this is bad, whatever. And then the person comes over a completely different subject and or a related subject, but not really to the same magnitude. Well, then you must believe this, when that wasn't even the topic of conversation. So that's a problem. And you see it constantly. I see it on my Facebook page, and I've been calling it out. Oh, diversion technique, interesting. Or, well, such and such did it too. So, all right, well, does this wrong make this potential wrong right? Let's not be comparing that you are, I'm gonna make up a new word, you're wronger than he is, wrong, wrong, wrong. No, let's not be focusing on, well, he did it, so I get to hit him because she hit me because he hit me. No, no, no. Let's go back to what is the right thing to do and then do it. So look at how your elected officials are talking. Are they using diversion? Are they using examples that really aren't part of what needs to be done? And I think it's really important to be listening to this. And do they need to hear themselves talk so much that they will repeat and repeat and repeat as if they were not in the room hearing what all the other people had just said? And, you know, some elected officials are very interested in hearing themselves talk and being able to say, I'm the one who said blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the record will show who said blah, blah, blah. If you get up and say, you know, that this is my bill, and, you know, your name is on it, then people know, well, they were the prime sponsor, which is the first person on a bill. It's the prime sponsor. If you're the prime sponsor, you know that bill. You better know that bill because it's your bill. So you don't need to say, you know, I know this. You're the prime sponsor. You can just say I'm the prime sponsor, or this is my bill, or whatever. And it's just interesting that you as an elected official are supposed to be making the best decisions for your constituents, which means you need to know all of your constituents. So people would say to me, well, I didn't really vote for you, but I need help. And I'm like, well, you may not have voted for me, but now I am your elected official, and it is my job and my duty and my responsibility and my heart to serve you. Tell me what it is you need. And many, many times people would say to me, I can't believe how you treated me so well and you helped me. Next time I'm voting for you. And that's what all elected officials need to be doing. You need to earn the vote either because people have already known you and your work style and your work ethics, or because they see it in action and they go, oh, okay, this person really does care about doing what they believe is the best for the entire constituency. And you cannot know that if you aren't out in the community and helping to hear what it is that they need. I'd like to now talk about some of the things that are being said. And it's really important that you look at how people are handling things. The legacy media has lied to you and me for many, many years. And they've gotten away with it because there wasn't enough other media to say, watch out, or this is not accurate. And now there are alternate medias. If you have not picked several alternate medias to look at and listen to, you may hear something that is different from what the mainstream media said that may make you say, hey, I need to go look at that bill myself, or I need to watch that on TVW, or I need to check with somebody who actually knows more on this topic to form my own opinion on what's happening here. When pundits, the media, will tell you after a debate, well, Senator such and such just said blah, blah, blah. It's like, excuse me, I just heard Senator such and such say blah, blah, blah. I don't need you to do that. Do not spoon feed me as if we, as listeners, are stupid. We heard what was said. Do you, as the commentator, have any extra facts that, or history, or something that you can give us that enhances or refutes it? And so that it gives me the bookends of where is truth on the spectrum. Just because somebody says it doesn't necessarily make it true. But when you have a source that tells you the truth over a long period of time, then you rely on them until you find out that you can't rely on them. And then you have to check fact check on your own with that too. So, I think it's important to look at what has the media said. Regardless of what party you're in, we all saw in the debate that President Biden was not okay. Now, I don't know how many people really paid close attention to some of his facial features, some of the things that were happening, how many people know about dementia and Alzheimer's. But there were more than a few clues that there needed to be some medical supervision, intervention, evaluation. And we were told all along, everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine. Well, now it's coming out that no, everything was not fine, and that there were many things staff was doing that that shows that they were aware that things were not fine. The border, we were told, is closed. We saw pictures of thousands and thousands of people coming across the border. And yet we were told that what we saw with our eyes was not accurate. We had a variety of people, Republicans and Democrats, people from, various states going to the border, taking pictures, reporting. And yet we were told, nope, this is not happening, when in fact it was happening. We were told inflation is fine. And we've all been to the grocery store. So media was telling us what they wanted us to think. And there is danger in that. Now, one of the things I've seen in the last couple of weeks, which I just shake my head, people are already starting to say, well, the price of eggs has not come down. He's been in office for X number of days. Why hasn't the price of eggs come down? What's wrong? We were promised. And I'm like, oh my gosh, do you understand how juvenile those statements are? Obviously, the underlying issues that got there over the last X number of years, whatever X you want to put on it, the reasons that it got there are going to take time to unravel. It cannot be done overnight. So people coming with these childish, naive accusations like, oh, I didn't get what I was promised because now it's been X days, realize these people are really not well informed when they say things like that. And don't get on bandwagons that are like this. Understand what it takes for certain things to happen. So anyway, I think that that's very interesting. And we were listening, and okay, my personal opinion here is coming. I am a fan of Carrie Underwood. I saw her at the Grand Ole Opry. I love her music. I think she's an amazingly wonderful entertainer. Okay, there's my bias. When she was singing at the inauguration, she knew that there would be people who would push back as there were at the last Trump inauguration, that, you know, you shouldn't be here because every entertainer should be a Democrat. So she knew that when she stepped up that she was going to get arrows coming her way, which shows courage. So, but she was willing to do that. And I believe that she and every other human being on this country has the right to decide what their political beliefs are. So she shouldn't be chastised that she chooses one way of thinking or the other. So then she's put in this situation where the machinery doesn't work and she has to do her song a cappella. I replayed that part of the tape numerous times to try and look at her body language to see how her eyes gave the thought process of how long do I wait? What do I do? How do I deal with this? And it was delightful. She was respectful. She was ingenious. She was courageous. And then she made a decision. We're going to sing a cappella. And those of you that would like to join in, please join in. Watching that military choir join in and other people join in, it was also interesting to see who did not join in to singing the national anthem. And also some that you could tell from their lips that they weren't quite sure the words, which was also quite interesting. But anyway, she did an excellent job. After that, some of the women of The View decided to chastise her. And Carrie Underwood decided to sue them. Yoo-hoo! I have thought several times about suing different people for things that they have said about me that were completely inaccurate. They knew were completely inaccurate. And yet they proceeded, including a reporter at the Seattle Times, whose first initial begins with a D, but we won't get into any further on that. But under some of the court cases, New York versus Sullivan, elected officials are not allowed to sue, which I do not agree with that. I believe that if a court would say that the things that were said about you are not accurate, oh, they didn't interview you before they did that? Oh, another person wrote a quote before they talked to you? Huh, those should indeed be able to sue on. But we cannot do that. So Carrie Underwood's not under that parameter. And so Whoopi Goldberg said, oh, I'm so surprised and disappointed that Carrie would go to this extreme. Boner said that our show is dynamic and that we should be able to express these opinions and that we didn't mean Carrie any harm. And Holster said, oh, I regret it, but didn't really have any specifics, and that we shaped the public discourse and that there was no intention of defamation. Well, I think it's a good idea that it goes before the court, that some of the things that were said about Carrie were unfair, that they did put a pressure on her, that they were intimidating on what I would consider to be unrighteous intimidation, that, that she is claiming that they impacted her reputation and she will not stand for it. And having lived through some things like this, where your reputation is questioned unreasonably, I hope she wins this case big time. And I think that it will be good to see what the court says about these kinds of people in the media being able to say things that are blatantly untrue and putting some parameters together. And again, personally, you write a quote before you talk to the person. You write a story about them that you never interviewed them on, you don't know any of the background on. I think that those are parameters that should be, you know, in professional conduct and therefore be able to sue. So we're seeing a lot of things happen right now. And, you know, Joy Reid saying that Latino men are all sexist because 55% of them voted to have illegal immigrants deported. Well, that's the first part of the quote. First of all, 55% of Latino men decided that they did not want the state of Texas to have illegal immigrants. It could be because they're seeing the impacts and that they came here going properly and knowing what the process is and what the expenses of illegal immigrants can be. And then the second part of the quote was that you voted like David Duke. Well, first of all, who knows how he voted? Didn't vote, whatever. To say you voted by somebody who's not popular, has a background, whatever the issue is again putting together a diversion and trying to cloud your evaluation. And then, they were saying that white people are all racist, and that that's why Trump won the election when in fact his votes were down 1% among the whites, but up among minorities. Those kinds of things are not okay. Saying that somebody is like Hitler, like a brown shirt, a white supremacist, they're ending America. All of those things are really going beyond the outside of what I personally believe are necessary conversations that are really inflammatory, that create anger, create hostility. And I know there are people who want anger and hostility, but that is not how a country or a family stays together. You need people who are rational, who will sit down and leave all the rhetoric aside. Normally, people have a spectrum. There's always going to be people on the far right, there's going to be people on the far left. But for most of us, we're in the middle where we can say, like I said earlier, children that are sexually abused at school, parents should know immediately. That should not be a controversial topic. The roads should have their potholes fixed. Local government should be doing that. They shouldn't be talking about federal and international law. It's not their purview. So the things that are at your role of government, whatever your level is, you have certain roles. And whatever those are, if you stick to your role, if you stick to being inside your financial parameters, and you stick to the facts and you openly listen to one another, you will find that you can find good compromises. So I think that what is happening right now with these different people, Harvard even gave kids a come days off to deal with the trauma of President Trump being elected. Very similar to when Trump was elected in 2016, where Dow Constantine brought in counselors to help the staff deal with the trauma. And I was like, ooh, we get to pay for this too. How nice. That was a facetious remark. And then in 2020, when Biden was elected, for just fluke, I sent Dow an email saying, hey, where are the counselors for the Republicans that may be traumatized that Biden's been elected? And of course, there was no counter. So for Harvard to do this says a little bit about what's going on in Harvard. So I think that we have a lot that we've unpacked. As a summary, I want to give you the hotline phone number. Please write it down because I have a strong feeling you're going to need it before the end of the session is over many times. Again, 1-800-562-6000. The bill that we've talked about today, and another one, we'll be talking about some of the others, but it's 1296 in the House, 5181 in the Senate. And I hope you are a definite no. The underlying law is just fine, and it protects children. And the idea that these legislators think that they can protect children better than the parents is quite unacceptable. So, with that, I look forward to talking to you soon.
Kathy will be back next week with another new episode of Behind the Scenes, right here on Valley 104.9 Northwest Eclectic.